We've heard it many times before in the context of these kind of prophetic discussions, but it really fits quite well with our assignment. To quote Dickens in saying, it was the best of times and it was the worst of times. Since 1914, you can hardly imagine throughout history a more tumultic, fantastic period of time. It's on record as the 20th century is the bloodiest century, and the 21st is not proving any different. It's not a lessening of violence. And yet it's also considered the wealthiest century on record. But we know there's such great disparity in wealth. And as out of sync as it may seem, I can't help but relate to you that we just read maybe the week before last in The Week magazine, a monthly information magazine, that 50% of India's population has no plumbing indoors and no access to a latrine. So that means that they're defecating in what little street they may have or in the field outside their home. Over 600 million people don't have an access even to what we would consider to be an outhouse. And it leads to a tremendous number of infant death because of the infectious diseases associated with that. Now, I just relate that to you because, on the other hand, India has home to billionaires, millionaires, and has an up-and-coming economy. There's many U.S. businesses that do work there, and it's a good thing because it's putting money in those areas. But just to say, as incredible as it may be, on the other hand, it can be so poor. And that's part of the best of times and yet the worst of times. And all of us here have been so blessed with a knowledge of the truth that it takes the pain of such information and it takes the edge off it because of the hope we have that their eternal destiny won't be like this if they only cooperate with the new arrangement when it's fully installed. And that's what you and I are all about. We're working to see that go into effect. So, of all people of earth, we have this fantastic hope to, as it were, take the edge off such painful information. Well, because everyone has a handout by now, is there anyone who's lacking? All right, thank you. Take a look, if you will, we're going to call it the last page. Doesn't have a number on it. What happened in 1914? Be on the back of one of these pages all the way to the back. What happened in 1914? I called Brother John Baker and said, Brother John, I have this from your talk, A Great Reversal of History. Are you planning on using it? And if not, can I use it? And he said, go ahead and use it. I got most of it from Brother Ken Rawson. So, Brother Ken, we thank you too. This is a nice compilation of quotes that are not from Bible students, and they're all regarding 1914. Let's just take a couple for time's sake. Let's open with the first one, The World Magazine, August 30th, 1914. The terrific war outbreak in Europe has fulfilled an extraordinary prophecy. For 25 years, Bible students have been proclaiming to the world that the day of wrath prophesied in the Bible would dawn in 1914. The Bible speaks of a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation. This prophecy of Daniel, Bible students identify as a day of wrath, the time of the Lord, and the so-called end of the world, references which are plentiful in Scripture. So there we have that back in 1914. But now take the next one in order. A quote by the author Edmund Taylor, his book, The Fall of Dynasties, which was written in 1963. So you see, we ratcheted forward about 50 years. Quote, looking back from the vantage point of the present, 1963, we see that the outbreak of World War I ushered in a 20th century time of troubles, which from our civilization has by no means yet emerged. directly or indirectly, all the convulsions of the last half century stem back to 1914. The two world wars, the Bolshevist Revolution, the rise and fall of Hitler, the continuing turmoil in the far Near East, the power struggle between the communist world and our own. More than 23 million deaths can be traced to one or the other of these upheavals. So let's stop there for a moment. You can read the rest of these at your leisure if you're not familiar with them. 23 million deaths is actually on the light side. That's on the light side. It's far more than that, actually, during the 20th century and coming into our time. But just to note that those who aren't Bible students recognize, historians recognize 1914 was the end of an era, the beginning of a new era, and it's been an era, if nothing else, of chaos, fantastic advancements in science and technology, benefits in medical advances, and yet, in the end, we can still trace mass murder and genocide, and now the real threat of actual annihilation of humanity, as Jesus prophesied in Matthew 24, was a possibility. We're at that point, and people know it. And believe it or not, I think you do, all this kind of information and destabilization is in the psyche of every human living. Everyone is affected by an unstable world. And I would directly attribute the increase in anxiety, depression, and other mental health disorders largely to two things. The ongoing destabilization right down into the family unit and our continuing fall from Adam. Our genetic makeup is further and further declining. Like Brother Russell suggests, the farther you get from Adam, just the more fallen we become by nature. It's true. Medical advancements have staved off some of this, but it creates other problems. You live longer, but you don't live as good, are you? Or are you? See, it's a mixed bag. It just really depends on an individual situation. But in general, we believe people are struggling with a lot more nervous disorder, largely based on the instability of everyday life on a global level, on a national level, in a neighborhood level, in the school level, in the workplace, and in the fracturing of our homes. And we carry on. We carry on. We move forward. But let us not think for a moment that it doesn't take individual toll. I think it has. But let's take a look now at another aspect here on the handout. It's going to be on page 2. It's called A Time of Trouble. And I'll be saying this throughout this next hour here. Our topic, our assigned topic is the impact of 1914 on these various things we're considering. The impact. It's almost as if saying when we look out the window and we look back all the way to 1914, what have we see developed to lead us to today's conditions? Well, the time of trouble, you could see on the second column, starts out 1914, World War I. 1917, the Communist Revolution in Russia, known as the Bolshevist Revolution as well. And then I'm going to skip down a little bit. 1929, the U.S. stock market crash in the Great Depression, which then became global. 1939, World War II began with Germany's invasion of Poland, and then the Holocaust, which was to kill over 6 million, and they suggest that's a far greater number now. 1945, just in case anyone didn't think it was possible, it was. The U.S. drops 2 atomic bombs on Japan. So atomic warfare is actually already has taken place. So that did alert the world that atomic and now nuclear warfare is very real possibility. 1958. The Chinese Revolution under Mao Zedong kills 20 million. 1970, Pol Pot and the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia, they kill 2 million. 1989, Berlin Wall comes down, and so does basically communism in the USSR and eventually in Eastern Europe. We get down all the way, we're going to drop down to 2011. Arab Spring Revolution begins, and what we're seeing in Egypt, the conflicts with the Muslim Brotherhood there, and what's taking place, what's going on in Syria, all these things are all part of this so-called Arab Spring Revolution. It's the people, the men who are in power in these different countries, it's all in upheaval. And that's exactly what we would learn to, you know, come to expect. But we get down to 2014, and we've got our 100th anniversary of World War One. Now, the last thing I put down there was Russia backs the Ukraine violence, and all we can really say is that we're watching it, aren't we? Just another development. The bear's back and trying to raise its head in power. And I find it rather a unique thing that we've had now two spy masters who then become leaders of the two superpowers. The first, George Bush, was head of the CIA and then became president. Vladimir Putin was the head of the KGB, and then he later becomes the head of Russia. So I just find it interesting that suddenly spy chiefs are finding themselves in control of the nuclear weapons of the two superpowers. Strange, but it's just one of these things. We're finding out more and more about spy agencies and the NSA and such. Again, a further destabilization of people's confidence. No one can trust the government. No one feels they really adequately trust the government. And another aspect of how peculiar these things are is that there are policemen who actually have formed organizations, underground organizations, where they vow that they are going to uphold the United States Constitution if their commanders give them orders that they think are in direct violation of the United States Constitution. Now, what does that mean? What it means is that some of the police feel and are expecting to receive orders that they feel would be contrary to what the Constitution says about protecting the populace of the nation. Thus, another one of these little things that just further emphasizes that the Lord is shaking all things that can be shaken. Brother Ed cited 1 Thessalonians 5:3 earlier today about the travail upon a woman. That this day would be of the Lord would be a time where we would have the continuing birthing pains until actually the peaceable kingdom is brought forth. And so we expect that these troubles, the conflicts, will continue to increase, but there's always a backing off. It's kind of a ratcheting forward, just like with these birthing pains. So we know it's different woman by woman, indeed. But we think Paul is citing that example to demonstrate that, again, these pains come, they subside, and then they come again, and they intensify the closer you get to the birth. And we know the Armageddon crash, the period of anarchy, will be the final spasm of pain that will finally deliver mankind into that peaceable kingdom. But we have to get there. But it does serve a purpose, and the Lord in his wisdom has it all under his control, even though to the world it seems so out of control. Now, the other element we'd like to think about as we talk about this is in a transition period, which we believe we're seeing since 1914, the end of the Gentile times, which was already covered, we now have one king, that's Jesus Christ. He's King of Kings and Lord of Lords. He is the one, we believe, who under the Heavenly Father's authority and instruction as our Lord's right arm is instrumental in removing this old order. Could he have wiped it out in a twinkling of an eye? Yes. But he chose not to, for a wise reason. Part of that wise reason is that you and I and the whole world of mankind are experiencing, since 1914, an accelerated lesson in the permission of evil. Since 1914, the world is experiencing an accelerated lesson in the permission of evil. The population growth has expanded and exploded in that same period of time, and the Lord is educating these masses in a rapid fashion. The element that plays into it is that the old order doesn't want to go away. So that increases the conflict. Another element of it is that the Lord, in his great wisdom, is removed the monarchical governments, the old established order of things, to allow mankind, with an increase of knowledge in the time of the end, we have an increase of knowledge, a running to and fro, I'll outline in Daniel 12, accompanying our Lord's return, which would then give mankind the ability to experiment with all fashions of government, political ideologies, humanitarian programs, social programs, different teachings, even different religions being spread all around to try to see if they could solve the answers to man's problem. And it's all been laid out there, and it's being amply showed that man cannot solve the problems as long as sin prevails. As long as sin prevails, they can't answer the problems. So the Lord is orchestrating it so that in the peaceable kingdom, when people come forth, they won't be able to say, oh, if we only had this kind of technology. Oh, if we only had this kind of information about the genome system. If we only had this kind of insights into science. If we could have experimented. We could have made communism work. But not with fearful, sinful, selfish, greedy man due to the fall in control. Can't work. So, I believe that's all part of why the Lord just didn't remove this in 1914 in a twinkling of an eye. He's allowed this progressive, ongoing situation to develop in order to educate mankind in an accelerated permission of evil. Let's take a look, if you will, in part here, to the on the handout to page 1. Imagine that. The increase of knowledge, first column. Now, we dated it back in 1874. Actually, some of these lists were compiled for a service in the past. We thought we'd just include it because it's of interest to us. In each of these elements, even something as simple as a light bulb, we've gone from incandescent, we've gone through fluorescent, we've gone through compact fluorescence, we've gone through high-pressure sodium. We're up to the LEDs, thank you, showing a brighter white that the eye can recognize. And I'm sure there's something else on the horizon, but you got to bring these things in stages. Otherwise, what kind of a market would you have? So even our first item, the light bulb, has gone through these serious changes until today. But if you look down to 1920, we have our radio broadcasting. 1926, television invented. 27, talking pictures. Just those three things there with a media base of communicating ideas, audio and visual to the masses right in their own homes. Before, you had to wait for the printed newspaper or magazine to come to your house. Now you get radio. Suddenly, real time. You know, if news happened and you had to write it down, someone had to proofread it, someone had to put it to press, someone had to actually then deliver it to your house before you read the news, if all things were going great, you might get it the next day. That's if everything was going great. But now, we literally can get real-time news as we know. We got reporters on the scene in some conflict on the other side of the world, bouncing their their information off satellites down to their editors, and it's boom, it's out electronically. We could sit in our homes, and we know all about what their information they're giving us basically in real time. Someone has said that you could actually take a picture of someone firing a gun across the room and actually transmit that visual around the world before the bullet even reached its target. That's interesting. That's mind-boggling for me. But what this does in the sharing of information, with this increase of knowledge, fantastic things have been developed. Fantastic, wonderful blessings. But, as we say, with fallen mankind, still under fear and sin and greed and selfishness, these very same wonderful blessings and inventions and information is turned to control other people, to take advantage of other people, to, as it were, climb up the backs of other people, to suppress those that you don't agree with or that oppose you. So has it added to stability, or does it add to greater instability amongst the people? It's quite mixed. You know, one of the things that's so striking is when we grew up, the old saying was, we didn't know we were poor because everyone around us was poor. We weren't seen beyond the ivory walls too much. We knew there were rich people. You didn't even think about it. But today, the poor know all about the lives of the rich and famous. It's on cable. They have whole television programs dedicated to seeing how the wealthy live. So we all know that it can't help but create a sense of unrest, dissatisfaction, disenfranchisement, and all these other anxieties that people can't have. So I had a situation, we were working in a million-dollar-plus home doing some work over the winter. They had frozen pipes, and we were repairing it, and we had a heating cooling gentleman come out, and he was marveling at the luxuriousness of this home, and it was pretty remarkable, I must say. And he goes, this is how the other half lives. And I looked at him and I said, no, this is how the other 1% lives. That's new. I wouldn't have said that 10 years ago. I wouldn't have thought that 10 years ago. So it's no longer the other half. With the middle class, since 2008, with the middle class being shrunk in this country and incidentally around the world, it's a global effect. What has happened is that 1% has gotten tremendously wealthier. So that brings me to the point of Reaganomics, the trickle-down theory. A rising tide lifts all boats. Well, it could if you had selfless people in charge. But when you have selfish people in charge who feel that they can manipulate the banking system, the mortgage system, government securities in order that they would benefit. What we see today is the 1% has grown tremendously in wealth, and the middle class, the savers, have been punished. We're still in the enemy's land. We're in the transition period. That's why it's such a dramatic situation. Well, as we move through our list of increase of knowledge, we get down to 1989, World Wide Web. Now we all know that's what that www dot is at the beginning. World Wide Web invented, silicone chip, and it just continues. We've had sheep clone, and now you can store all your information in the cloud since 2000, and we've got right down to our last item there, surgical robotics. Some of these are fantastic blessings. Fantastic blessings. And like we say, though, the same technology is often developed out of military applications. But the end result in all of it is that we're thankful for the blessings. We see the potential. We do think there's plenty of benefits in the world. But in the hands of selfish man, with sin still prevalent, we have this horrific time of trouble. Now, in Luke, the 21st chapter, just going to read a little bit there. I'm really not spending much time in Scripture in this discourse, which is not my usual, but it's the assignment. It's good. Luke 21 and in verse 25, and there shall be signs in the suns, the moon, the stars, and upon the earth, distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, men's hearts failing them for fear, and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth. For the powers of heaven shall be shaken, and it continues. That's our emphasis, that what we're seeing is all part of that Hebrews 12, the Lord shaking everything that can be shaken, and the result is this distress of nations, and it leads to men's hearts failing them for fear. Let's take a look, if you will, at on our handout. It's going to be all the way to the back. It's called The Impact of 1914 on. It's a short list. Well, I guess it's not a short list, maybe shorter than the others. You see that one, The Impact of 1914 on. Since 1914, we've had the start of the USA and Russia becoming superpowers. We've had the decline of Europe. We've had the fragmentation of former empires and then, in fact, of nations. A typical example is the Austrian-Hungarian Empire broke up. We had Yugoslavia, Czechoslovakia. They broke up. Now we've got Serbia and the other small nations. And the point being that it continues to be fragmentized. We see the monarchies are failing. Were fading by 1914. The monarchies were fading. And 1914 basically was a death knell for the monarchical families that had controlled Europe and much of the world. The wars weakened morality. We'll talk about that more. The Great War, which was World War I, ended up being actually in two parts. They signed an armistice at the end of World War I, and it sowed the seeds for World War II. New and growing worldwide fear and uncertainty. Isolationism is no longer feasible. In other words, one country just can't decide that it's going to isolate itself from the rest of the world and say, I'm not going to engage in your troubles. It's just impossible anymore. The international economics of things is such, they're so intertwined that no one can just turn the back on the other. If we wanted to say, well, we're not going to get involved in the with the Islam and Muslim conflicts over in the Middle East, we didn't have to. They brought it here. They brought it on our own jets, and they blew up the Trade Center. We didn't have to go over that. We can't just isolate ourselves and say, oh, we're suddenly safe. This is all part of what leads to the instability in people's psyche. We know now, and that's what they wanted to do, show that you could hit the great superpower, United States, right in one of their giant commercial centers, and we were powerless to stop them at the time. And brethren, you know and I know, they've been trying to do it ever since. It's just that they've been stopped. We don't know what the Lord's arrangement will be for the future, but it's not like it's over. We can't isolate ourselves and just say, we're not going to get involved in the world trouble. But that's all part of what the Lord's designed. No one can escape these experiences, this acceleration of experiencing the permission of evil, because it's all meant to prepare mankind for the new peaceable arrangement of love and righteousness and joy and kindness and selflessness. But they're apparently not ready yet. So it continues. The end of colonialism, but it was replaced with foreign assistance and military intervention. In other words, the colonial powers that had divided up places like South America and Central America and Africa, colonialism in itself had an end. However, the nations are still investing, either financially with foreign aid, or they are intervening militarily all around the globe. So the United States, we might say, oh, we're not colonial, we're not a colonial power, but we send money to Egypt, Israel, we send money to Jordan, we send money to the Philippines, we intervene in Afghanistan, we intervene in Iraq, and we were intervening down in Nicaragua under Reagan. We do all of those things. It's just under a different name. the powers that be still like to manipulate world economic situations to access resources to force different kind of labor deals and economic arrangements in order to benefit the corporations or the government of said country. Do we go to war for oil? Yes, we have influence for oil benefits. So, end of colonialism, but see the next end of colonialism, the second one on the list, the end of colonialism and empires actually, in some places, led to renewed tribal and ethnic conflicts. For example, the Hutus and the Tutsis, when they were slaughtering the one slaughtering the other in Africa, it was because the colonial powers that had been actually removed, the colonial powers had indiscriminately divided up tribal lands. They had favored one tribal people over the other. When they pulled out, it was retribution. We're not saying it makes it right. We're just saying there usually is a cause before an effect. A lot of responsibility on the what was the European powers and their offshoots. We've since 1914, part of the impact is the emergence of various forms of governments, ideologies, economic structures, and their failures. The rise and fall of communism, Nazism, fascism, and even under communism, you've had its various regimes around the world. China was different than the USSR, which was different from Cuba, which was different than North Korea. They had their exercise. Some failed, some modified, some changed. But all of these convulsions, I think Italy has had about 50 prime ministers since the end of World War II, just one right after the other. People have been experimenting, socialism, democratic socialism. They've been experimenting with, of course, free market capitalism, social democracies, all these various forms of governments and business practices and ideologies, all with the intention of trying to improve the lot or with the intention of a few people in power gaining control over the masses to their benefit. The United Nations developed after World War II as the outworking of World War II, and the United Nations comes along and they have their international laws and judgments. They have their own tribunal. And again, it was all these attempts are man's attempts to try to solve the world's problems. That's what they're really trying to do. Let's put the best face on it. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. The United Nations, the World Health Organization, the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, which is the world banking system. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. They are cooperating together, about 190 or so nations now. It started out with about 51 at the end of World War II. Over 190 now. These nations are all trying to regulate the world's affairs in order to not allow another great world war to develop. They're trying to alleviate the suffering of people through the World Health Organization. They're trying to help the impoverished companies with their IMF bank loans. But what we have found is all of this, unfortunately, continues to be directed by fallen man. Some always have a subversive plot to try to undermine those who are doing it for the best of intentions. So that the mixed result, as you and I know, is the United Nations ends up being rather pathetic and helpless in its ability to quell the violence around the world. We've had more violent conflicts around the world, famines, and economic catastrophes than if we didn't have them. In other words, I don't think they've really have stopped it. But the Lord has allowed it in order for man to see. As long as sin's within, selfishness is within, then they're not going to solve the problems no matter what kind of an organization they can develop, because it will not succeed at this time. What we really need and what the world will learn, they need a benevolent dictator. One who is willing to leave the comfort of heaven and come down here to this dark place, suffer with mankind, and then render up his perfect life on their behalf. And come back and eliminate this whole corrupted order of things and give everyone, even those corrupted leaders, the opportunity to learn what the truth is, to accept him as their redeemer and learn the ways of God, and now learn what the real solution to all of world's mankind's problems are. And it'll be effective. And it'll be equal. And then we'll have the time when, in fact, everyone has an equal opportunity. Well, as we continue down that long, sad list, we have our era of mass murder and genocide. We've already talked about that. Spiritism goes mainstream, yes, with 1874, the advent of our Lord's thousand-year day beginning. As Jude and Peter have told us, that there would be the releasing of the chains or the restrictions from manifesting themselves and on the fallen angels who were disobedient back in the days prior to the flood that came in Noah's day. And it's a gradual releasing to see if these fallen angels were repentant at all. And those who got themselves more involved with mankind are showing they're unrepentant and worthy of judgment. But what we find is that a greater activity in spiritism, and spiritism is now mainstream. It doesn't have to wait to the midnight hour for a seance. They have it on cable, on TV. You can call the psychic hotline, whatever you want, on every angle you want, and it goes without hardly anyone voicing a concern or criticism. That's how mainstream it's become. Spy chiefs become superpower leaders. We touched on that. Chemical, biological, atomic, and nuclear warfare is now a reality. Medical advances contribute to longer improved lives for many, yet many more still suffer and die in infancy. Greed and selfishness keep many of these benefits from getting to the people, as we've mentioned. Now, the increase of science and technology, which has been such a great blessing, has contributed to higher criticism of the Bible. Now, you and I have all studied out effects of higher criticism of the Bible. We've thought about it. It's called modernity in some angles. And what it is that people, our fallen man, in part, likes to get away from a standard, a mirror that condemns them. Most people don't want to be condemned. So why read the Bible? I'm not living up to it. I'd rather not. I follow my passions. I'd like to go with society. So a form of higher criticism of the Bible unfortunately leads to people abandoning the Bible directions for right living. And what we have then is a significant increase in immorality and all the heartache that comes in association with that. We'll talk more on that. Morality in Western nations continue to decline. And finally, billionaires and millionaires increase as the middle class declines. Now, in part of this, that is Brother Harry Wildbud's phone, and we still talk about that call to today. Didn't want to single you out, Brother Harry, but it... Now, it's going to be kind of hard going back to the serious subject. Well, we'll just thank the Lord for a little relief. I had Sister Mildred Raffel, dearly beloved in this neck of the woods, as well as others. In one of our visits with her, she had mentioned that she was so sharp on things in the world. I mean, she was in tune. And one of the things she was saying in a conversation, she goes, you know, when the boys came home from World War I and from World War II, they brought back with them a loss of morality. Now, she probably said it better, but what I remember from that was what she was meaning was when people go to war and they're involved in such violent acts, their conscience is compromised. And the sense of the moral standard along many lines is weakened. And it really seems as if that did set the stage. World War I was followed by the Roaring Twenties. We had Prohibition seemed great. All it did is create an illegal bootleg market for liquor, and people kind of took breaking the law to get the liquor and to have a little bit of a good time in their mind as not a big deal. But it's a continuing lower of the standard. After World War II, you had the 50s and the advent of even, again, a looser code. The 20s gave jazz a certain rise with the flappers and various things. The 50s came along with a certain rock and roll. In the 60s, we had, as it were, the hippie movement. We had the advent of the birth control pill, and they had the advent of free sex, a further decline in moral standards. The hippies went materialistic as they got older, but the lower moral standards stayed and got worse, so that we ended up with a 50% divorce rate in America. We have living together now as not being considered, in the old phrase, shacking up, that no one even says that anymore. It's an acceptable thing. You could be the head of the United States and engage in such conduct and not lose your job over it. We're at the point now where we have legitimized and legally accepted homosexual marriages, and homosexual marriages can adopt children. And we are now having legalized marijuana in two states, and when other states see the tax revenue that that generates, you'll have more of that. Of course, the legalized gambling has been going on quite a while. It's the poor man's dream of how he might be one of these rich people that he sees on the cable TV with the big cars and the big house, which he knows that by labor of his own he won't ever be able to achieve, because capitalism has to have a wealthy class, but it needs a broader poor class in order to support the habit. All that'll change. All that'll change. Capitalism will be shown to have been a failure as well. There's quite a remarkable element that also has taken place as a result of World War I. Which led to World War II, the advent of communism in the 50s, late 40s and 50s, as it was a Bolshevik revolution in 1917, but as the Iron Curtain spread over Europe and such, and it came into its own power more and more, communists were promoting a workers' utopia. That was the concept. You'll notice that when the boys came home from World War II, you had the GI Bill. They could invest in going to college, or they could purchase a home, or they could pay some form of trade union school. So that the government saw, we got to give some work to these guys because we've got a militarily trained army coming home and we've got to do something to boost the economy, so we're going to invest it in this way. So in this country, in the advent then of the 50s and 60s, it was known now, we look back at it fondly as being the golden era, where you got an education, you got into a job, you could work your way up, and after 35 years of faithful service, or 40 years, you'd have a pension, you'd have full medical benefits, you didn't have to change jobs, and everything was great. But notice, starting at the change in the late 80s, after Gorbachev reversed the communist position because they were seeing they were losing the Cold War, Russia's position changed. Communism now was going out of order. By 1990, there were very few communists, truly communist countries left. The revolution had swept over Eastern Europe and elsewhere. About the same time, you had the advent of the 401k plan that was ostensibly supposed to help the employees of companies so they could invest in this and the company would match it. Then you wouldn't need as much pension. Well, what I'd like to suggest to you is at the very time that the Soviet Union and communism started its decline and falling apart, over here in the Western nations, the workers' benefits, pay, pension plans, and medical plans started to decline. No longer was it felt in the capitalistic countries that you needed to keep your workers from desiring this communist utopia, a workers' state, providing everything you needed. So the Golden Age ended here, just as communism fell. So that today, even though we've had a 5-year bull run in the marketplace, they bring out that most of the jobs are lower paying than originally, or they're part-time jobs so that health benefits don't have to be paid, or more employees are having to pay a portion of their health benefits, and so on and so forth. So I don't want to get more bogged down in that, but just think about it. What was happening with the transitions? So do the giants of the corporations really have the common people's best interests at heart? I think we'd all say no. They have the 1%'s interests at heart. Prior to World War I, London would have been the banking center of the world. After World War I, the Allies were so in debt to the United States, they owed them over $13 billion. The United States has spent 52% of its GDP on the war, and yet New York replaces London as considered to be the world's banking center after the war. What had happened is suddenly the United States found itself in a place with great resources, and an improving economy on the way up, and Europe had been decimated, and Europe was in a declining role. That is sets the stage for, as it were, the two superpowers as we know it. Now, Forbes magazine this year, 2014, states that there's 1,645 billionaires. 268 of them are new. In fact, there's a new billionaire from Tanzania and a new billionaire in Lithuania. The richest one is Bill Gates with $79.2 billion. And the second one, what country do you think the second billionaire comes from? Second highest billionaire out of 1,000. Mexico, yes. Carlos Slim. He's a business investor. Mexico has the second richest person in the entire world. That's a one percenter. These figures are really quite staggering when you look into it. Some of these billionaires in the top 50 made their money off chocolate, off beer, Trader Joe's. In fact, the Trader Joe's owner, he owns Aldi and Trader Joe's. He's not even American. He's from another country. And beer again. Now, the candy, the Mars candy family, three of them are in the like top 50 billionaires. I just point that out to point out what's the real value of things. What's the real value of things? $13.8 million households are now worth $1 million or more, but that's only 0.9% of the world's population. There's our 1%. That's our 1%. Richest countries are United States, Japan, and China in that order. All right, let me leave that go. There's so much we could touch on these things, but we do have to let that go. The nominal church. The divine right of kings was already fading away since the 1600s. It was on a steep decline since the Reformation, actually. But the Great World War just really finished it off. Those houses that had supposedly been the blue bloods, because blue was for divine, they weren't red-blooded like the regular working people, those families lost their positions of power as a result of the war. But I will say that there's still today millions of Christians that believe that God should be in control of the government of their country. God and country. They don't have the divine right of kings concept of old of ruling families, but they very much have the concept that we should have a government controlled by God-fearing people. For example, Catholics believe the Pope is the vicar of Christ. He's also the head of the Vatican. It's their concept. So what we see is some changes, but it's not all gone. In Europe, Christianity, the populations declined. That's true. However, worldwide, Christianity increased, even keeping pace with the population increase. Mainly, they've arisen greater in authority in numbers, as it were, in South America, Central America, and Africa. But quite literally, looking up the numbers on the internet from the World Christian Encyclopedia, there are 2 billion Christians in the world today. It's actually 33% of the world's population today is Christian by name. 33%. And it's in 238 countries. Now, Islam. Islam is only 19.5% of the world population in comparison to 33%. Hinduism is the third largest one with 13.5%. Now, out of that almost 2 billion, a little over 1 billion claim to be Roman Catholic. So what's happened is the Catholic population, as we were saying, has shifted. They are more in South America, Africa, Central America, but guess what? It's growing in the United States. 22% of our population in the U.S. is Roman Catholic, largely due to this immigration that we're seeing. Now, in saying that, we're just pointing out that the nominal church hasn't disappeared. It's keeping pace with where it actually had been population-wise in 1914 in comparison to the world population, but it shifted where they are. Mainstream Protestant denominations have declined, but they've been replaced more by evangelicals, non-denominational, and Pentecostal groupings. In fact, 19%, according to this poll, 19% of the American population identifies themselves as being evangelical. Now, with all that being related, we come back down, and I know we're in our closing time here, to Israel. And I'm going to make up for that by asking you to look at your handout again, because I didn't know how to quite cover all of this very well, so I thought I'd give it to you in written information that you could take away. Page 3. It's entitled Israel, God's Time Clock. And as you go through here, we've actually started in 1878. We've used this previously. And yet you go all the way down through, and we go all the way over to the last page 6, as it were, page 6. And all of that has to do with a timeline of events that took place in Israel or in regards to Israel. But I'm going to get us down to just the very end. This will be our closing. Let's get us down to the very end, 2014. That's on page 6, right above the Balfour Declaration. We gave it to you in its entirety, if you haven't read that before. Operation Protective Edge. The goal of the mission is to destroy Hamas infrastructure of rocket launchers, rocket storage facilities, command centers, and leadership. The point is, if you follow this current conflict with Hamas in the news, you'll know that Israel has uncovered 31 underground tunnels. They've demolished them. That's why they had to go in on the ground. This is where the Hamas fighters were surviving while their civilians were getting butchered. As it was well put by one Israeli, we use our missiles to protect our people. Hamas uses its people to protect their missiles. The world if they aren't recognizing it, it's out of willful, it's out of willfulness. But lastly in this, I want to end on a ray of hope. We know it's the transition period. We recognize that the purpose of these things taking place. The impact has been recognized by thinking people throughout this entire last 100 years. But I want to end on a positive note of something that just has taken place regarding Israel. This is from the World Post from July 18th, 2014. 430 immigrant, Jewish immigrants came from France. They performed Aliyah during the invasion of Israel into Hamas, while Hamas was firing these thousands of rockets into Israel. They left France because they said in France we're persecuted. The anti-Semitism is so rampant in France, we feel safer in Israel. 430 of them. There are 6 million Muslims in France, 600,000 Jews. And I quote from the article when they interviewed some of these people. This one woman states she has 3 children, and the nearly 2 weeks of rocket fire doesn't deter her from living in southern Israel. Quote, "I'm not worried. I'm in my country," she said defiantly. "I'm not afraid. God will protect us." God bless the Jews of faith.